regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association here in just a minute. Some good news to report out of Virginia. I did not think I'd be able to say that this legislative session, but yes, we actually did see the defeat of one of the umpteen gun control bills introduced in the Commonwealth this year. Third Circuit, en banc, oral arguments in Coons versus, Siegel versus, I guess it's not Plackett anymore. Can't remember the name of the new Attorney General of New Jersey, but this is a challenge to both cases, challenges to New Jersey's Bruin Response Bill that imposed 25 new gun-free zones, as well as new insurance requirements for concealed carry licensees, new application requirements, most of which were upheld by a three-judge panel on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. But the Third Circuit decided to take that case en banc, which is a sign that a majority of the judges on the Third Circuit took issue with at least some portion of that three-judge panel's decision. And the expectation and the hope is that many of the gun-free zones that were upheld by the three-judge panel will be struck down by the en banc Third Circuit. It was interesting oral arguments. I honestly, you know, sometimes you can read some tea leaves. Other times it's very difficult based on the questions to get a sense of where the judges are coming down. That was more the case today. Both the defendants and the plaintiffs, I think, had really tough questions posed to them. Obviously, I'm biased, so I think that the plaintiffs had a better argument. The plaintiffs had a better argument. Pete Patterson and Aaron Murphy were the attorneys representing the plaintiffs in Siegel and Coons, respectively. Both of them did a great job. Pete Patterson was on fire, particularly in terms of talking about sensitive places. It is the state of New Jersey's contention that virtually any place where people gather that might be generally protected by police can be sensitive and off limits to lawful concealed carry. Aaron Murphy noted the historical outliers that New Jersey is relying on, but Pete Patterson's argument was a little bit different. He said, you know, a sensitive place actually has to be treated sensitively, right? So take nuclear power plants, for example. Guns are banned there, not because the state has deemed them sensitive, but because the state treats that as a sensitive place, right? There is heightened security. There are checkpoints. You got to check with a guard. You don't have to do that when you go to a public park. You don't have to do that when you go to the beach. You don't have to do that when you go to a restaurant where alcohol is served, all of these sensitive locations under New Jersey's Bruin Response Bill. In other words, it's not enough to simply say, well, that place is sensitive. There are vulnerable people who will gather there. The state has to show that it is treating these locations as sensitive. It can't just be a label they slap on every location where they want to ban concealed carry. Whether or not the majority of the Third Circuit agrees with that description, I think it is valid. And I think that it actually aligns with what the Supreme Court said in Bruin, that the state of New York couldn't ban concealed carry on the island of Manhattan just because it's a crowded place that's generally protected by police, right? There needs to be some indication that the state or the federal government actually treats these locations as special. And in the vast majority of New Jersey's gun-free zones, that is simply not the case. So hopefully we'll get a decision later this year. We're still waiting on the Third Circuit's decision in the challenge to New Jersey's ban on so-called assault weapons and large-capacity magazines. Oral arguments were heard in that case back in the fall. I am keeping my fingers crossed that we get a decision very shortly from the Third Circuit. I don't think they're going to drag their feet in releasing their decision. So hopefully, again, before long, we'll find out what the Third Circuit has to say about New Jersey's gun and magazine ban. And I anticipate, you know, at least, I would say, 3 or 4 months before we might get a decision from the en banc panel in Coons and Siegel. All right, with that, let's turn our attention to what's going on in Virginia, where on Tuesday, a hearing was held. Number of gun control bills, including 11% excise tax on guns and ammunition, the $500 tax on the sale of suppressors. Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association was there in person to testify against that bill. And honestly, something amazing happened. Take a look and a listen.
Knox, appreciate you coming on the program today. It's really good talking to you, sir.
Cam, pleasure as always.
And it really is a pleasure today because, let's just get it out of the way here. The $500 tax on suppressors introduced in the Virginia State Senate, it's dead. It was defeated.
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
So what happened, Knox?
A lot of things happened. So we were working that for a couple of days up here in Richmond, came in. And really, I think the thing that won the fight for us was the medical community really coming out in force and highlighting the fact that suppressors are hearing protection tools, that passing this legislation would not only disproportionately impact low-income Virginians because they're the ones that can't afford the tax and subsequently can't afford the hearing aids that they would need if they lose their hearing over time, but also that these things aren't silencers, that they diminish the noise of a gunshot, still loud enough to the point where you should still wear traditional hearing protection like earplugs and earmuffs, but that this would have a net negative effect on the public safety of Virginians. And, you know, in a rare moment, every single legislator on that committee listened.
That is amazing because, you know, as you know, we're facing an onslaught of anti-gun bills here. The 11% excise tax on firearms and ammunition, that is still alive. In fact, I'm only aware of one other bill that's been passed over having to do with firearms. It was a ban on recreational shooting on less than 5 acres of property. Mm-hmm. But we've still got the permit to purchase. We've still got, you know, the so-called assault firearm ban, large capacity magazine ban, messing around with right to carry reciprocity, permit to purchase. I mean, all that is still alive. So honestly, I anticipated that when we had you on today, we were going to be talking about, you know, what could gun owners do to try to stop this suppressor tax from going into effect. It is fantastic to hear that folks were listening. I wish that they were listening to gun owners and some of these other bills. But I mean, honestly, as a Virginian, Knox, I'll take any victory that I can get this session. And this is a victory.
Absolutely. Look, I wish that we could do more. You know, they heard House Bill 207, which was the $500 tax, first in that House Finance Subcommittee hearing yesterday. Then immediately after, they heard House Bill 217, which was the 11% excise tax on firearms and ammunition. You know, so it was quite an interesting juxtaposition, you know, where we have our debate. You know, we hit them with facts. They listened. The primary bill sponsor who sat on that subcommittee, she was the one that offered to table it. You know, it was pretty surreal. Something that we haven't experienced since a few years ago. There was a bill to try and ban suppressors introduced in New Mexico. We flew out to Santa Fe. We testified and, you know, we got in a bit of a debate with the committee. And at that particular hearing, the bill sponsor, I forget the senator's name, offered to a friendly amendment to his own bill to strike the suppressor language out of that otherwise like assault weapons ban. So that was, we've experienced this before, and it's interesting to see how receptive some legislators can be to the hard scientific facts of suppressors. And I do think that differentiates suppressors from other traditional firearms issues. Yes, Second Amendment absolutely does apply, but you know, this is one where it's pretty binary. It's pretty black and white in terms of the impact that suppressors have on hearing conservation and health. I wish that we could figure out those arguments for other Second Amendment related issues. But you know, in a climate like Virginia in this particular session, you're absolutely right. Let's celebrate every win that we can get and then continue working on the rest.
Absolutely. At the hearing yesterday, were there supporters of the $500 tax? Were any of the gun control groups there to testify in favor of this bill?
There sure were not, which was fascinating. You know, and I think we've got to give a special shout out to the Academy of Doctors of Audiology. So they penned a letter opposing the legislation supporting the use of firearm suppressors. And their executive director actually joined virtually to testify. She did a truly fantastic job explaining the issue as a completely independent, non-related entity policy. This is going to impact real life Virginians. And when people lose their hearing, it impacts, it has tremendous downstream effects in terms of quality of life, you know, and access to care for lower points, and did a phenomenal, phenomenal job.
That is excellent. I mean, as somebody whose ears are screaming actually this morning, you know, anything we can do to save folks from, you know, tinnitus and hearing loss, I am all in favor of it. And again, this is, I think, very good news for Virginians. One of the few bright spots so far this legislative session. So I want to thank you, Knox, for, again, flying out to Richmond, testifying in person. I want to thank that doctor as well and all the folks who showed up to oppose this bill. As you say, I wish we had, you know, arguments that were convincing Democrats about some of these other bills. But, you know, at least, again, this is a bright spot and it's something that we can hopefully build on. So thanks again for joining us this morning. We'll let you get back home. But I look forward to talking to you again here in the very near future.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it. And again, sic semper tinnitus.
Absolutely. Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association joining us here on Bering Arms Cam and Company.
My thanks to Knox for joining me on the program. And again, I was very surprised when I saw the post on X from Philip Van Cleve of the Virginia Citizens Defense League that this bill had been killed in committee. I was not anticipating that. I really thought this would be one of those bills that Democrats passed purely out of spite. Oh, so the Republicans in Congress zeroed out the tax on suppressors. Well, we'll more than double the $200 tax. And I am pleasantly surprised to see that the testimony of the audiologist, the testimony of Knox Williams, and others actually seems like it had an impact. That's not going to be the case, unfortunately, with every gun control bill that we're seeing in Virginia or New Mexico or Washington State or New York or California. But it does speak again to the importance of being present and letting your representatives know where you stand. It's easy sometimes to think it doesn't make a difference. They're going to ignore me. And maybe that is the case most of the time. But it doesn't have to be the case 100% of the time, as we just saw in Richmond. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Not a true recidivist report, but it is one of those head-scratching sentences from South Carolina. Judge near tears, but no prison for Rock Hill teen who killed friend with stolen gun. But the judge almost cried. So I guess that's, you know, that's all the punishment this teen needs. Family court judge David Guyton sentenced the teen to 15 months probation and left 180 days of jail time, quote, hanging over his head in a York County family court hearing regarding the 2025 shooting death of Braylon Jackson. Jackson's 15-year-old friend pleaded guilty last November to involuntary manslaughter and possession of a gun by a minor. He had been free since. He did face potential jail time on Tuesday, but as long as he stays out of trouble for the next 15 months, he'll be okay. Boy, I told the judge, I'm sorry for what I did. I've changed, and I'm going to be a better person. Okay. Okay. That's great. I don't think that that absolves the 15-year-old of stealing a gun from a car. That, to me, is a crime no matter what. Deserves punishment no matter what. And then he was messing around with that gun with his friend Braylon when the gun discharged. Apparently, not intentionally. The judge, according to the Herald newspaper, was visibly moved in court when Braylon's grandmother, Valeria Johnson, stood and said that she hoped the shooter learned his lesson and that Braylon's family forgave him. The judge said, I applaud your ability to forgive. Said that in almost two decades on the bench, he had only seen one other victim's family show such grace. The prosecutor in this case, Aaron Joyner, did not push for prison or even incarceration in juvenile detention. They did ask for a longer suspended sentence, as well as 18 months probation, to, quote, reflect the seriousness of the crime as well as the teen's poor decisions to first steal the gun and then play with it. Teen apparently had taken the magazine out of the pistol, didn't know that there was a round chambered, and that was the the fatal mistake. He ended up pointing the gun at his friend's face, pulling the trigger, and again, a round discharged. The prosecutor said the decisions that the teen made led to, quote, lasting and horrible consequences. Indeed. Indeed. And, you know, again, I hope that this teen is able to turn his life around. But to me, there are two crimes here. There was the involuntary manslaughter, and it is very moving that the victim's family has forgiven this teen. But then there's the other crime, right? Stealing a gun out of somebody's car. And that essentially goes unpunished. I don't know that the gun owner has forgiven this teen. And I do fear that the soft sentence. No, I doubt this teenager is going to mess around with a firearm around his friends again. Imagine shooting and killing your friend leaves enough of an impression that you're not going to do that. I am not convinced, however, that getting a slap on the wrist for stealing a gun is going to keep this kid on the straight and narrow going forward. I would have preferred to see at least a few months in juvenile detention. The teen was ordered to have, I guess, mental health treatment. And if nothing else, I think that would be easier to ensure that he receives that mental health counseling in a supervised setting, frankly. But again, not going to happen. All right, so on to today's Armed Citizen story from the Houston, Texas area, where a robber was shot after following a man home from a gun range in order to try to steal his firearms. Thankfully, the gun owner who was the intended victim was able to act in self-defense. This happened around 5 o'clock Tuesday afternoon. The would-be robber was apparently shot after trying to steal from the guy who had just left the gun range. In a later statement to Fox 26, Houston Police says the attempted robbery involved three men who followed the victim from the gun range. They approached him and grabbed a bag containing firearms from him, but the victim had other guns, including one that he was carrying. One of the robbers shot in the chin is expected to survive. The other two suspects then fled the scene in a vehicle. Don't have a lot of information here. Obviously, this would be a case of self-defense. So the gun owner not facing any charges. It's unclear, like, when this guy was targeted. Was he on his way to his car? Had he driven home and then was getting out of his car when they approached him? Either way, I mean, honestly, this is something a lot of us probably don't consider when we're heading home from the range, right? Am I going to be the target of somebody who wants my guns? But maybe we should be a little more alert to that possibility going forward. So I am glad that this individual, you know, not only had his firearms in his range bag, but also was carrying on his person and was able to protect himself. And we will provide more information if it becomes available there out of the Houston, Texas area. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A woman in Burlington, Wisconsin, thanking her neighbor after she was able to escape a domestic assault just a couple of days ago. This was, I guess it was last Friday. Taylor Holbeck says a man who she had taken out an order of protection against, had a no contact order. He ends up kicking in her front door, starts attacking her, her child, and her dog, King. She said, it blows my mind how it all happened so fast. Like, within a 30-minute time span of my door being kicked in and me running over here. Here is the home of Michaelin Schiller. She has been friends with Holbeck since they were kids. And Holbeck said, at that emergency time of need, all I thought was to get my child to the one safe person I knew was around. Said it took every last bit I had in me to do it, but I did it. So she runs over to her friend and neighbor's home. Schiller said, I just kept saying, what's going on? Because she's on her last breath. She literally collapsed to the floor behind my couch while she hands me her baby. Schiller then called 911. She said, you know, I did feel like I had the responsibility to make sure that Taylor got justice. Holbeck says she doesn't know if she would have made it out of the house without Schiller's help and Schiller's family. They are encouraging others to seek safety if they are facing similar situations. Schiller said, you know, if you can leave, just leave. Holbeck said, if you can get out, don't go back, but leave where you are. As of Monday night, charges were pending against the guy who was arrested during the incident. He is also facing domestic abuse-related charges in another case was set to appear in court on Tuesday. I hate these stories. And, you know, again, we've talked so many times before with Nicole Gozer about stalkers, about the importance of obtaining an order of protection, but also the recognition that it is ultimately a piece of paper. It's not a suit of armor. And, you know, Nikki Gozer's advice to anybody in a situation like this, not just women in a situation like this, but, you know, men can be the victims of domestic violence too, is to get that court order, right? So there is a paper trail. There's this documented evidence of abuse, but don't depend on that piece of paper alone to keep you safe. And, you know, Nikki has said, I mean, listen, if you have to leave, if you have to move to another location, you might have to do that. You know, don't get and this is, I guess, less of a concern these days, but, you know, don't get a landline phone. Don't be listed in the phone book. Do what you can to safeguard your privacy. But yes, also be prepared to protect yourself. You know, thankfully, in this case, the guy apparently did not run across the street after. Taylor Holbeck. But what if he had? What if he had kicked in the door of Mikaelin Schiller's home? I don't know if Mikaelin Schiller had access to a firearm. I would like to think that she did. But again, ultimately, you can't just rely on a piece of paper to stop someone with violent intentions. Because at the end of the day, it is just a piece of paper to somebody who disregards the words that are written on it. But Mikaelin Schiller in the right place at the right time, willing and able to help her friend in need. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I do want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Laura Carno from out in Colorado, Faster Colorado, about some of the gun control bills that have been introduced this session. Not good. You think Colorado, they've gotten to the point in California, right, where it's difficult to come up with new gun control laws. But no. They're always able to get more creative. And there are several concerning bills we'll talk about on tomorrow's program. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation and actually around the globe. Tom Knighton covering that horrible shooting in Canada. 9 people shot and killed. The shooter taking their own life as well. We've got the latest legal legislative news for you, so be sure to check it out. If you like what you see, would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT, get 60% off your membership. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.